monetary system and Wall Street. The president of Wall Street just resigned to work for Lockheed, a bankrupt organization. That means the war is going to go on. It's going to be good for Wall Street. Because I
can't see how they're going to let the McGovern be elected.
No.
By popular vote, like Kennedy.
No, I have some friends here today in the room with me. Harry's from the South, from Texas. Another friend here from Oklahoma, and her daddy's a cattleman there. And there's just no way that these men are, and my own family in Los Angeles, well, I don't know how they feel about this thing now, but I'm not going to speak for them. But I know that there are forces in this country, in the aerospace, in the whole space shuttle system, in the Vietnamese, in Asia. Our budget went up just for a cost overrun of 77 weapon systems. It was $28 billion this week, $28 billion.
Oh, what was that you were telling me?
In a cost overrun.
The other day about the daily cost of the war?
Yeah, it's $100 million.
$100 million a day.
$100 million a day. You know, in the time that we're spending here, you know, in this 1 hour, divided up, you know, 24 into that $100 million, just for a nothing war, a nothing war. Well, the bases are growing in Thailand. You know, really heavy. We intend to stay in Asia. There's a lot of oil in Asia. There's a lot of oil in Alaska. We can control it through the space agency, and Von Braun has his hands in that oil. He resigned the space to control that oil. There are powers that Standard Oil, Rockefeller, he just opened a deal now to start bringing oil from Russia. And I've mentioned before the interest that Rockefeller and John J. McCloy, who was on the Warren Commission, have in the oil in the Ukraine. They're just not about to let the third world, the people, the human beings, get their thing together. You know, somebody asked me about the election. I don't see any way, knowing as much as I do about how these people moved into power, head of the American Bar Association, Leon Jaworski, worked CIA foundations, represented Texas at the time of the assassination for the Warren Commission, and John Conley, waiting to be one of the top men in the country who knew about the assassination to kill Kennedy. When Garrison wanted a certain witness, Sergio Acacia Smith, Conley wouldn't extradite him. If he wanted to find out and clear all the rumors, Conley could have cleared all the rumors a long time ago. See, if people think, you know, like the question says, what's going to happen after the convention?
Conley changed his story on the bullet that hit him, too.
Oh, well,
first he said it was a different bullet than the one that hit Kennedy, and then later on he withdrew that.
He still kept it that it was a different bullet. You see, that's his power.
Yeah, but he didn't.
You know, by his not agreeing with the Warren Commission, Harry, this is his power. Like he says, I know what happened.
But he didn't make a big public thing out of it.
But it's very clear that he doesn't. That what he says is true happened to him.
Right.
That Oswald didn't do it. But that's just holding something over the people in Washington.
Yeah, that's his end.
See, that'll make him the president of the United States, that bullet, that extra bullet. Because it's what you have on people, you know, there's a lot of blackmail all the way up, and Conley was state of Texas was controlled, and Conley could handle that. Let's jump. You know, we're talking about conspiracies here. We're on to Bremer and his mental condition, and also there was another thing about Martha Mitchell. Bremer says, don't play around with my brain. I'm not mentally sick. And Martha Mitchell had another quick telephone conversation, and she says, I'm not mentally sick. And she said, be sure I'm all right, and I have a lot to tell. And she's not going to accept that story either, that she's mentally loony. Let's jump right now, for the second half hour, to the conspiracy in California, because that's a long subject, really deserves a whole show. We only have 20 minutes left. I talk every week about conspiracies to kill the president of the United States and people like Martin Luther King. But there are conspiracies in the state that are linked to the national conspiracies, like Lewis Tackwood names people in the state that are linked to the national conspiracies. And a newspaper called the San Francisco Bay Guardian. Now, this newspaper in San Francisco, I'll give you the address. I think people should send for it. It's 1070 Bryant Street in San Francisco, 94013. I'm giving you the address because I can't possibly cover this in the 20 minutes. I'll just give you the gist of this article. San Francisco Bay Guardian, and it's the story of the Soledad frame-up. And it's the story about a psychiatrist who lived in Monterey named Frank Rundle, who was the only psychiatrist out at Soledad. Don't you think they should have had one a long time ago? It's amazing that he was the chief psychiatrist.
I know they should have had one.
With all those problems. Yeah. Well, this newspaper has a list of the climate. It has an article of what was happening at Soledad when a particular prisoner came in there as a prisoner. And Tony, his name is Tony Pewitt. He was sent to Soledad. And he was a fairly good prisoner. He was in on a stolen car problem. He was considered not violent, and he worked with psychiatrist Rundle at Soledad. And several guards were killed at Soledad in the time that Tony was in that prison. And they wanted the prison system out of Ebel Younger's office, the Attorney General of California, and the California Correction System, and the District Attorney Curtis in Monterey County. We talk about him all the time. They wanted to frame Rundle as being a radical and get Faye Stender, who they called a radical. She's a lawyer who represents the underdog. She lives in San Francisco. And Rundle complained about the conditions in Soledad, and he spoke up at the trial, the first hearings of Hugo Pinnell that we've talked about on this show. And he said, Pinnell lives in a dark, dirty, miserable cell with garbage all around. And he testified he had neurological disorders. He couldn't be treated there. It was a filthy, dirty place. So Rundle was trying to get some changes. He said they were treating these people like animals. And the prison system then said, well, we'll frame him for the conspiracy to murder a couple of guards. We'll get him in on that conspiracy. We'll take care of Rundle, you know, as well as the other prisoners.
Yeah.
Do you want to make a few points on that? You read the article. What do you think? The gist of the article, I'm giving you the address, and we'll talk about a few isolated points. The gist was that a prisoner was offered 3 years parole if he would go to Rundle's home, and they wired him up with all kinds of sound, and the prison authority sat in a car outside, and he was coached with what to say to try to get Rundle in on the conspiracy so they could charge him with conspiracy to murder, too.
Right. Well, it just shows that the California conspiracy, the purpose of it is to get the radical troublemakers out of the system.
Yeah, well, by definition, a radical is a guy who sees a man sleeping with garbage.
Oh, sure. Well, I
and these aren't even communists.
I trust everybody knows what I mean when I say radical.
Yeah.
Tongue in cheek. And they threaten people with longer prison terms in order to force them to capitulate. Pewitt was threatened. Well, actually, he was told he would be given parole, and then they said they would not give him his parole and make him stay in jail 3 years extra.
If he didn't frame
Rundle. Now, Rundle happened to be a very good friend of Pewitt's. In fact, as May said, Pewitt was his assistant. So Pewitt's, he said all he could think of was 3 extra years in prison. So he went on into Rundle's house and wrote him notes while keeping up a mundane conversation.
He wrote a note in his pictures in the Guardian. He says, I'm wired for sound. It's really heavy, wasn't it?
He ripped open his shirt and he had mics all over.
Yeah, there's a picture. He says, it's like I'm having an EKG. He said he was bugged and wired and all the way down to his shoes and everything. And they went in the kitchen to have some drinks, and Rundle didn't know what to do. So he wrote back a note while they're having a conversation. What do we do? So Pewitt says, we'll go out and get a Coke. And he called some detectives in Monterey who went over and took a picture of the wiring system.
Took affidavits.
Yeah, and the rented car. They let him out of jail with a rented car and restaurant receipts and all this stuff. And he was supposed to implicate and make conversation and get this psychiatrist in on a murder charge.
Well, they used the credit card of his fiancée's father. To that was another blackmail.
He bought a pair of shoes, so they said,
right.
Yeah.
His fiance bought him a pair of shoes with her father's credit card.
Yeah.
And then her father decided, under pressure from the prison system, decided to prosecute Pewitt. There he was.
That's right. And then to show a statewide conspiracy, when he got back into the arms of law enforcement men, they said, well, you really blew it, so you're going to jail for 3 years. So they sent him down near Bakersfield. They got him on a murder rap of a thing that hadn't been solved for years. And they said,
it was a four-year-old case.
Four-year-old murder rap, and they said, you're involved in this murder rap. Yeah. And the only thing that saved this guy from going to jail, he was willing to go to jail 3 more years to help Rundle not be in a conspiracy charge. But the only thing that saved his life from being in jail on a murder rap, imagine framing for a murder rap, was that Rundle called a lawyer and detectives and had everything taken down.
Publicity.
See, when you're in jail, you can't even, a lawyer has to come to you. So they had everything set. And then when Rundle wrote up to the California Department of Corrections, they dropped all the charges and didn't want a suit going on. But the opinion, this is the opinion of the author who wrote the article, we can go into some more details. He said, I believe that when the Soledad killings began, these killings, let me stop, were the ones where the blacks and whites went out in the yard, and that's the time when they were really going to get Jackson the first time when these killings began. And
We know that's what they told us that happened. We don't even know if that's
The guard just shot three blacks just in cold blood. And the grand jury said justifiable homicide. So then there was a fight, and a white guard was shot, and then the blacks were charged with murder. He said, I believe that when the Soledad killings began, most prison officials were too insensitive to believe that anything was wrong with the prisons, and they blame outside agitators. The underground press, the radical lawyers, the number of Black Panthers that enter the prisons. Everything except the human conditions that the prisoners were rebelling about is blamed. Well, this is way, let me just stop here for 1 minute. This is what happens in our society, or with Hitler, or with Agnew, or Mitchell, or Nixon. Every time people scream and yell about human conditions in America, they say, well, those are the radicals talking. If we say the prisons are oppressive, they say you're a radical.
Right.
They take your fingerprint when you go to a trial, like Hugo Pinnell's. They take your photograph. You become an enemy of the state if you want to know if Hugo's going to be tortured. You are considered an enemy.
And you can't go in and watch Hugo Pinnell's trial without being called a pig.
No.
By the police.
By the police. They take your They don't take your fingerprint. They take your handwriting. You have to sign something. They check your handwriting, and they take your driver's license or identification, and then.
They search you with a metal detector.
Search you with that. They did, yeah. And then some of these trials, like Angela Davison up in the Soledad, they took pictures of everyone going in or out.
Oh, yes. And after they get your name and have you identified, they run a check on you with their data banks.
Do they?
Yes. And if you have any outstanding traffic tickets, remember that girl that was picked up? She had an outstanding traffic ticket, so they...
On the way home from the trial, they hassled.
No, she was in.
Oh, really?
In the trial, and they grabbed her, and they said they took her, put her under arrest, and told her she was going to have to pay it right then. Or
I didn't remember that during Hugo's trial.
Yeah, during Hugo's trial.
Oh God.
Well, that's what they did at the Angela trial.
I know.
See, so if you have anything pending on you, then they'll pick you up if you try to get in the trial.
That's terrible. Well, this. Article says, Dr. Rundle was the first insider, the first one to complain about the prisons decisively. Imagine that. George Jackson, this young boy, was in on a $90 thing he stole, and he was in a whole 6 years, and nobody saw him to solitary, isolated confinement. This fellow, Duke Hewitt, was kept in confinement down there, too, and couldn't see anyone.
Yeah, after the Bakersfield charge.
In a dark hole. How many months? It was months before anybody could get to him. Mm-hmm. And so Rundle was the first insider to complain about the prison. Not only did he criticize the security cells, but he threatened to take his case to the public if necessary. That makes you a radical. You see, that is where the trouble. If you take it to the public, and that's why the conditions are as bad as they are, because most people don't take anything to the public. They don't have the courage to see it. I mean, just like, I shouldn't digress, but I think about Ellsberg this week. His trial's going on, and he's complaining that people haven't read the Pentagon Papers. And he said, oh, my goodness, I tried to tell you so much, and none of the potential jurors read it. Nobody read it. And
is he listening to Dialogue Assassination?
Well, you know, why didn't he take the other problems to the public, you know? There was a funny thing. One man that they called in on the jury there had read the Pentagon Papers and found them really interesting, and he blew it. He should have just said he hadn't read them. He finally got someone who read them, and then the judge sent him off. So what good does it do to read them? They say, no, you can't be on if you've read them.
Yeah, they let them on if they got a security clearance, but they don't let them on if they read the Pentagon
Papers. I'll tell you what, if I were on that jury and they called me, I wouldn't say I read them. I think a system that's this corrupt, that locks everything up, that does all their secrets. Don't say that. Harry says I shouldn't say that on the air. Okay, I take it back. Let's go on to Rundle. My alter conscience here. Okay. The Guardian said it wasn't enough to fire Rundle. The blood had to be drawn from him. Can I say that? That's the California Corrections Committee. Yeah. I didn't say it. The Guardian said
it's a quote.
Blood had to be drawn from Rundle. So from then on, incredible power and resources were thrown into action. Now, this is true. The credit card people, the Bakersfield police, everyone. I said the parents of Hewitt's fiancée, the correctional officers, a credit card criminal complaint was turned on and then off by somebody. The Attorney General of Office in California did some of this. It was intricate bugging machinery that was paid for, private planes, money for these expenses, phony passes to leave the prison. Homicide detectives came in from another county. All of this was done to come down on Rundle because he said that the prison conditions were not bearable. And he wouldn't turn over his... The reason they tried to frame him, too, is that one of the fellows that they suspected of killing a guard had been a patient of Rundle's up to that time. They wanted his psychiatric reports. Well, they weren't reports after he killed the guard saying, I killed him, you know, what'll I do? It wasn't a confession. But even then, but it was, what he had there was a discussion of headaches and problems before he was accused of killing a guard. It didn't prove they were confidential, and he wouldn't turn them over. So they took them from him and fired him. And he said, no, if I turn over what the prisoner says to me, then no one will have my confidence in this prison.
No one will ever trust another psychiatrist.
That's right. I mean, and he's the only friend they had inside there. Can you imagine how lonely it is inside those walls?
So now we'll just, the prisoners won't have to worry now because the psychiatrist will be court appointed.
So there's no psychiatrist.
Well, or no psychiatrist at all, yeah.
What they get is a Marine sergeant who retired, and he's taking over the prison. You know, there's a lot of retired...
Helping with their problems.
Yeah, there's retired military that come in and take over, you know. Now, as far as the election goes, another answer I did want to bring up, because last week I didn't do it, was McGovern's acceptance speech, because a lot of people have asked me, always asked me about the elections. Who's going to win? Who should we vote for? And now the chances are narrowed down to McGovern and Nixon, and can McGovern live? That's the question. But so far, he's being very honest. His background seems good. I am certainly going to encourage everyone every week to register and vote and get behind him.
Yeah, it seems to me that George McGovern, the more success that he gets, the more success that he has, the more he gets his foot in the door, he begins to tell us a little more of what he knows about the government. Because in this acceptance speech was by far the most he has said about this Nixon administration, you know, about the secrecy, the killing, how it's based on death instead of life, etc.
Well, I was very impressed with the acceptance speech because I felt that he brought up many points that I'm going to have in the article, how Richard Nixon came to power. And one of the important things, he talks about the problems of the last 30 years, and it's been just since 1942. That this country changed its whole atmosphere. It was never one of great equality, and we always had a bunch of rednecks. Even before 42, we had a bunch of people worrying about blacks, and there was oppression and lack of equal opportunity. But it was a haphazard kind of a racism, a latent jealousy of minorities, a misunderstanding. It wasn't a systematic ripoff that we got after we incorporated the losers from World War II, the Nazis.
That didn't give us war babies much of a chance.
No, not at all. The war babies had no chance at all, because at the time you were all being born...
It was already gone.
They were all making deals with Reinhard Gehlen and Nazi intelligence to keep the war going and the Red War scare going and the hot and cold war. And I think that the real problems of our country began in 1942. Project Paperclip is that book I always refer to, the importation of the Nazis, incorporating them into the American system and setting up their headquarters here down Jamaica and putting them into defense industries, and they're into the law system here, they're into the press, they're into the social scientists. I was just reading an article in New York Times about this particular Nazi who went to Texas to the prisoner of war school, and he was given books and worked on rocket systems, and he runs a foundation in Germany that works in social scientists, psychiatry, mental health, and every facet of our life, law and everything.
Which school was that? Prisoner of War?
He was a prisoner of war during World War II, and he was caught in a submarine. And he was saying to Texas, did you know there's a big school there for prisoners of war in Texas of German Nazis?
Where?
I'll look up the name of the city. You're from Texas. It's right in.
Not from. I live there. I'm not from there.
Harry's right next door to your house. You know it.
I didn't even know that.
Go home with all this in mind, and you'll look it over differently. But they were this group of prisoner of war went right from Nazi Germany to Texas.
Well, do the people in Monterey know that they're the biggest spy school on the West Coast is right here? They don't know that either.
We talked about that once on a show about the Nazis right out there with their little swastikas on the desk and their little plane. Well,
Messerschmitt.
In his acceptance speech, McGovern speaks about the last 40 years. And then he also said, Nixon said 10 years ago, you won't have me to kick around. And he said, if we all get together, we'll redeem that pledge this time. But he spoke, this is McGovern's speech, he said, we stand today not as a collection of backroom strategists or special interests, but a direct reflection of the public will. See? And let the opponent stand for the status quo and we'll refresh the American spirit. And let the opposition collect their 10 million in secret money from the privileged. And let 1 million ordinary Americans contribute $25 each to win the campaign, and we'll have a McGovern Club of 1 million members. So he could have 1 million members for $25 each. I'm sending $25 and registering. I wasn't a registered Democrat because I was not. If Humphrey got it, or George Jackson or Muscat wouldn't even bother to vote. I even now still wonder if I don't think I'll be in this country in November. But if you want to vote for somebody, you vote for McGovern if he's alive. Otherwise, I can't see a way out yet of this quagmire of people. They've been fed so much propaganda that if he died, they'd feel we were relieved. Wall Street is calling him a menace. Reagan was in Ireland saying the country would be set back 1,000 years if he won. I've never heard such dirty talk with so much little behind it. Really hate talk. This isn't political talk. This is dirty hate.
Well, as Goering, I'm sure everybody's familiar with Goering. Goering said in the 30s, it doesn't really matter what's true. All that matters is what everybody believes.
Yeah. Well, the people that wrote Goering's speeches, right? You know, for the administration.
Well, Goering wrote his own speeches. He was minister of propaganda. But you know, if you put a lie out over the air, such as the media oftentimes does, then that's what the people know as truth.
That's right.
Even though it's not the truth, that's what they wrote it in the paper.
A man like Haldeman, there was a question in the paper this week, how does Haldeman get so much power in the White House? You talk about press and communications. Some woman wrote in, I went to school with him and he was really brilliant, and what's he just doing as the communications man? He has one of the most important jobs in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the one that says, we won't have news conferences because you ask silly and stupid questions. He has evaluated the newsman in this country is not even being worthy to talk to. Because he doesn't want the questions asked, he turns it around, your questions aren't even worth seeing you about. This is a very dangerous administration, and people don't realize that I've been spending the last week cleaning up my cross-filing system, getting a lot of articles in order, and there's about 1,800 subjects I'm cross-filing, and they all pertain to the political assassinations, and one of them is the news media and how the news is perverted and the truths are never told. And so that if Nixon is afraid to answer a question on any sensitive subject, he just says, well, you're too stupid. You asked the wrong questions.
Well, for instance, get back to Martha, how the news media has misrepresented her. Jack Anderson came out with a column talking about how she was irresponsible with her children and
Let their teeth rot.
And Life magazine did a spread of...
Was that disgusting?
Of Martha Mitchell.
There was a woman who was supposed to be the hostess at the Republican convention. She was the most wanted woman at the Republican parties for fundraising outside of Spiro Agnew.
Little sweetheart.
Taft Shriver, the head of Music Corporation of America, had a party for her and Mrs. Nixon. I mean, they socialized. They were close friends. There was no problems. They loved her big mouth, you know, and then when they found out that she had seen a crime at the Watergate Hotel, then Life magazine came in and had her dancing on the lawn like an idiot, you know, everything but drilling from the mouth, like she was just really freaked out.
If you get a chance, go check out that Life magazine. I think it was a week or two ago that came out there.
Yeah.
Full-page spread of Martha Mitchell.
In a yellow dress, making really silly grins and looking stupid, you know. And
just completely destroyed her credibility.
Yeah.
Because who would believe that? Would believe a woman like that?
McGovern said, America, the time has come for truth. There's a time for everything and a time for truth and not falsehood. And truth is a habit of integrity, not a strategy of politics. I think a lot of the things he said in his acceptance speech are excellent, and I've tried to live by them. I think truth is a matter of habit of integrity. You can't find certain truths, and if Ellsberg is having trouble raising money for his defense, and the liberals aren't behind him, and nobody trusts him, it is a matter of integrity. When he saw the Pentagon Papers, he also knew or had to know what happened to John Kennedy. Because, as I've said before on the show, the Pentagon Papers, one hunk of it, ends with Diem being killed in the very next one, in like 52 and 53, that's they're consecutive, great. Has Kennedy dead after Diem's conversation with Henry Cabot Lodge.
We and have the war Lyndon was Johnson. Escalated the next day.
Well, November the 24th, we have the escalation with Lyndon Johnson.
Of course.
So you have, truth is a habit of integrity, and when people don't have that habit, if they're selective in their truths, they're not even going to support Ellsberg when he comes along.
Yeah.
Well, Harry, it looks like it's time to wind up. Thanks a lot for coming and helping me out doing Dialogue Conspiracy. You like to do it?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, well, we talk on the phone, Harry and Beverly. I have a lot of friends that keep up with all the latest news, so he thought he'd share the program with me today. And thanks a lot for coming.
You're welcome.
Okay.
This is KLRB FM in Carmel.